Welcome to the Should've Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Dustin Swedelson, VSiN cashing out. He's all over the place this summer, but he will join us and we will do a little everything. Did a little college football Monday with Tim Murray, did all baseball Wednesday with Jensen Lewis. Go back and listen to those. We'll do a little college football. We'll do a little baseball. We'll do some NFL. Get his thoughts, his bets. He's a Giants fan. He's a Mets fan. So get his thoughts on those teams. You know, any sleeper teams he like, awards. So we'll have a little fun with Dustin coming up. And about a week or so from the deadline, for years, it was July 31st. I think it's August 1st or 2nd. Now they pushed it back a day for whatever reason, but we're getting there. It's one of the more fun days of the year, just because you get so many different guys changing teams. And I've been saying, and I've been under the opinion for a while, all right, Scooble's going to be traded. The last week or two with Detroit creeping up, all right, Scooble's probably going to stay. You're getting to the point, 4.5 games out of a playoff spot entering play Thursday, 6.5 games out of a division. If you just fast forward a week and you're in the same spot, I kind of think you have to trade him, because you're talking about erasing a 5-game deficit to get in the playoffs. Step one. Step two, winning a wild card round. Step three, winning the division round. Step four, winning the ALCS. Step five, winning the World Series. At that point, in all of these, especially, you know, getting in the playoffs, the first part, you'll be a big underdog. You probably got to trade him. I've been using the magic number of like 3. If you're 2.5 out, 3 out or less, you probably keep him. The Tigers started a 4-game series Thursday night against the Royals. Kind of have to either sweep, get 3 out of 4. You have to cut into this, because if you go into the 31st, August 1st, and you're still 4 out, 4.5 out, boy, 3 is really the line where even at 3, I don't know what to do. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. I know next team markets at prediction markets has Dodgers as the favorite. Dodgers are always the favorite for all these guys. I would say right now, 50-50 if he's on the team. I really think it's 50-50. I think this weekend against Kansas City, probably have a good weekend and probably propel themselves to the point where they decide to keep him. But, you know, you get the idea. It's you're really taking it up to the deadline. If you split these games against Kansas City or something like that, or you just play 500 over the next week, if you don't make up ground, and after this, they host Baltimore next week. So, huge sequence of games, huge set of games for the Tigers. And then you go to the A's after that. So a huge 7 or 8 games here to decide what happens with Scooble and the Tigers. And it's interesting. You know, you look at the American League, Yankees coming to play Thursday, 3 out in the loss column, 2.5 out. Even the Red Sox are only 7 out in the loss column. You can start to cross off a few more teams. I've been saying, you know what, Mets, Rockies, Giants, Angels, A's, Royals, those are the only sellers. Those are the only cross offs. And it's funny. You look at the A's, 16 games under 500. They're only 8 games out of the American League West. Not that I think they're going to make a run. They're horrible. They've been playing terribly. They're hurt. Lost 8 out of 10. The Angels are 21 games out, 21 games under 500. 41-62. They're only 10.5 games out. I mean, that is really bizarre when you look at the AOS, 51-51. Texas is in first place. Seattle, 1/2 game out, 51-52. The Astros, who were left for dead, are only 2 games out at 50-54. So some weird little quirks here with the standings, where to be 21 games under, 16 games under. I mean, we've seen teams eliminate 8 game deficits. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're doing it because they're a bad team, but it's just funny how you can be 16 games out and be like, a good week and we're right back in the mix. It's really bizarre from, when you look at the A's and just some of these quirks in the standings. But one team I'll add, the Blue Jays are done. You can put them as a seller, whether they would trade Gausman, whether they would listen on Cease, who they just signed, I'm not sure. You know, maybe relievers. I don't think they'll trade Guerrero. It's interesting where you look at last year and say, hey, we were a series of many miracles away from winning the World Series, and they all needed to go against us, and they all did. Is that really who we are? Is this who we are? So some interesting conversations from Toronto, but they're 6.5 out of a wild card spot entering Thursday, 10 games under. They're done. They're not making a run. You can throw the Reds in there too. Reds are in last place. Now they're only 5.5 out of a wild card spot, but 7 games under 500, 4 games out of fourth place, 47-54. So would you listen on Hunter Green? If the Dodgers can't get Scooble, would they try to get Hunter Green and say, no, let's just keep adding arm after arm after arm? So should be a fun deadline. Another team that's similar to the Detroit situation, San Diego's right on the mix here of, do we buy, do we sell? 3 games out of a playoff spot, 50-52, entering play Thursday. Miller, if Miller and Schuber are the two big trips, I'm not sure how many other big names. I'm not sure Lindor gets traded. To me, those are the two big names to watch. And then you get, you know, the filler guys, the Michael Walkers of the world. You'll get, you know, a reliever, a spare bat here or there. But in terms of like all-star superstars being traded, Schuber and Miller are the two guys. And both of those teams are right on the fringe where you can do it. You can do any of the three. You can sell, you can hold, or you can or you can buy here. I don't think the Padres will buy, but they're always super aggressive here. And a lot of it will depend here on the next week. Games on Friday, Yankees-Phillies. That should be a fun one. Both teams in the mix. And the Phillies have quietly started to creep backwards in the NL East, where they were just coming on so strong. They erased a huge deficit, but they end up playing Thursday. 5 out in the loss column behind Atlanta. So Atlanta's got a little more cushion. Even though they have not played great here, they won 6 out of 10. Phillies cooled off and had to play the Dodgers. So that's an interesting series here coming up this weekend. Braves, Orioles, Dodgers, Mets. Hard to believe 2 years ago this was an NLCS. Not that long ago, this was game six of the NLCS. Mets were 2 wins away from a World Series. It seems like a lifetime ago. The red hot Red Sox, who finally lost a game, they host Toronto, Houston, and the White Sox. So some decent games and teams to keep an eye on. The Padres are in Miami, a swing team here, in Kansas City and Detroit. 4-game series in Detroit as those teams are the ones to watch. And keep mentioning the NL MVP race. And it's starting to get a little more conversation the last couple of days, where Otani, if he's not going to pitch, does that open the door for somebody else? And that number continues to come down a little bit with the MVP number as we look at it here in a... Yeah, still minus 450 here to win MVP. So we'll see. Should be a fun week or so as we get up to the deadline. You start to get some of those trades a little bit before the deadline. Not everything happens on the day of. You get some 2 days before, 3 days before. You want to, first off, just get the guy on your team for the extra day or two. You want to make sure he passes the physical. So after this weekend passes, I would think midweek next week, you start to see some of these trades trickle in the 28th, 29th, 30th, and then you usually get a flurry of them on the deadline day. But coming up, someone we're not going to trade. Untradeable, Dustin Swielsen, cashing out VSiN. He will join us. That is next. This should have bet more. All right, we are back. Should have bet more podcast. I will introduce my guest as the Ben Zobrist of VSiN, cashing out. He's the host. I believe it's coming back soon. So Ben Zobrist / Dustin Swielsen is who joins us. Dustin, it's been a while. Thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
My guy, this is what dudes do, right? They just sit around and name former athletes that they can pull. Like, my favorite baseball player of all time happens to be a utility guy, Joe McEwing. My varsity baseball jacket, it said catcher, first base, third base. Guess how many innings I actually logged at those positions? It'd be 2 innings at first base. I basically DH'd. That was my role. Now, I should have DH on the jacket, but that's kind of embarrassing to do that at that point in your life. So Shane Halter, Jose Oquendo, Randy Velarde, Clay Bellinger. You have a favorite utility player of all time? Luis Soho. A lot of clutch hits from Luis Soho.
Was he really a utility? I guess he was a utility infielder. Yeah. But he wasn't really an outfielder. I'm trying to think. Who was the little guy in the Angels? Was it Rex Hudler used to move around?
Sean Figgins?
Sean Figgins, I guess you could count. Yeah. I'll have to get back to you. I mean, the Yankees, was there a good Yankee utility player? I think you hit on all the good ones.
Eugene Wilson.
Enrique Wilson?
Right? Enrique, that's it. Enrique Wilson.
He used to own Pedro, and supposedly yeah. Pedro, and we'll get to something that's actually worth listening to in a minute. Maybe. It's possible. he and Pedro, I guess, were big friends, like good friends growing up or whatever, and Pedro, a big part of his game was intimidation, and Enrique Wilson was not intimidated by Pedro because they were buddies, and he used to actually hit Pedro pretty well. All right, we got a lot to do. We'll get to baseball, get your thoughts on the deadline, Mets are going to do, college football. We'll just do a little blend of everything. What your hottest football take? I'll ask it this way. The team that you're way higher on than everybody else or way lower on anybody else, if you had to pick one in the NFL, would be what?
The Bengals, but like it's groupthink, but I think the groupthink is risky this year. Like it's worth the risk. I think in years past, a lot of us were way into Cincinnati, and there weren't a lot of reasons to be. You were kind of forcing it, trying to fade Baltimore. And I just think that this is a rare situation for them where this is the team in that division right now in the North that has continuity. We're not used to, like, for better or worse, Zach Taylor's back. But the one thing is they're not implementing new systems. There's not an acclimation period. You anticipate Pittsburgh taking a step back. Cleveland, not just because of Monken, has nothing to do with him, but trading Myles Garrett, they'll probably take a step back. It opens things up here for the Bengals, and there has to be a sense of urgency. You cannot get off to another slow start, because at some point you're reaching the levels of Burrow asking out of town. I mean, Matthew Stafford eventually leaving Los Angeles and retiring almost feels inevitable, even with the Ty Simpson draft pick. Yeah, I'll trade you Ty Simpson for Joe Burrow down the road if I'm the Rams, if he asks out of town. I just think that they are in such a unique position that they haven't been in before. And then with that, my hot take with Cincinnati is not just that I like them this year. It's that I think Burrow's an MVP candidate, and I think it's the best play at around 10-1 in that range. If you look at their schedule, Will, they're going to open up with so many bad pass defenses from a year ago. These teams probably got better, you would assume, but some of these teams, it's kind of just baked into what they do because they're so good at stopping the run, or they emphasize other things defensively, that they'll give up passing yardage. But to open the season, he faces Houston, who was fifth in pass defense week two. Week one, he has 27th Tampa Bay. Week three, Pittsburgh 29th. Week four, Jacksonville 20th. Week five, Miami 18th, and they're going to be way worse. And then week six, Baltimore, who was 30th, and then the bye. If you go through this schedule, they only face one top five pass defense from a year ago. They face three top tens, but one of those three is Cleveland without Myles Garrett now. They'll face the 31st, 30th, 29th, 28th, and 27th ranked pass defenses from a year ago. I think that they could just go on an absolute tear. But again, this is all a waste of time if Joe Burrow's not healthy at the end of the season.
What do you think of your Giants? On one hand, you know what? Adult in the room, Harbaugh, and I guess he had a weird... I meant to watch... A bunch of people sent me this weird clip of him talking to the team. I actually haven't watched it yet, which is you know, just a snapshot of how people take in social media when they see the headlines or see people comment about a video. I actually haven't watched it. But you know, on one hand, you got an adult in the room. You got the second-year quarterback who showed some promise. There's those glimpses of last year's Patriots. That being said, tough division. You know, Harbaugh, you can say he's a little overrated his last few years in Baltimore. I know, you know, everyone loved him because he goes for it on fourth down and he became a kind of a media darling and an analytics darling. But man, there's some disappointing endings. So I'll give you the floor. Your thoughts on the New York Football Giants or what?
I'm high. I think they go over 7.5. I think that they contend for a playoff spot. And I'm not normally bullish on this team. I normally think they're 2, 3, 4 years away. It's not just having an adult in the room compared to last year. Will, we're going back multiples now. We're talking Joe Judge. We're talking about Ben McAdoo and Pat Shurmur. I mean, it has been such an embarrassing ride of head coaches for this team. There's a few things that jump out that I keep hearing people saying that I don't agree with. One, the schedule. Guys, they played the hardest schedule in the league last year. Not second, not number one hardest in the league a year ago, and they were a bad football team. They were still competitive. The defense was horrible. They couldn't stop the run. That's why everyone making a big deal about Dexter Lawrence not being there. Dexter Lawrence helps the pass rush. He doesn't help stopping the run. They were the worst run defense in football with him in the middle. They got better with the pass rush. They brought in guys who I think will be more serviceable in stopping the run. A couple vets and DJ Reader and Shelby Harris. They brought in some more depth on that D-line. It's a lot of grown men that they've added. Even with Malik Nabers and the injury questions, you have so many veterans in that locker room at receiver now. Calvin Austin, Juju Smith-Schuster, Darnell Mooney, Braxton Berrios. I guess I'll say OBJ, the corpse of OBJ. It just feels like the floor's been raised. And I think one of the biggest things that they addressed in the offseason was a couple pieces on the defense. One corner. Greg Newsome is a huge signing for them, coming over from Cleveland and Jacksonville. They've desperately needed someone who could be respectable at corner. The draft pick they got out of Tennessee, Colton Hood, I think he ends up playing a bunch. And then Tremaine Edmonds at linebacker to go with Arvell Reese. They're going to be so much better at stopping the run, which was their biggest deficiency a year ago defensively. And the offense, I trust. Even if Scadabo's doing backflips and injures himself again, I trust the offense. I think Likely is a superstar. He might be the number one weapon through the air. I like over 7.5 wins. I think they contend and could make the playoffs. It's just there's so many teams vying for that last wild card in the NFC. It could be the Giants, it could be the Cowboys, it could be the Commanders, just in the division alone. It could be your Vikings. There are so many teams that are just right on the edge of the playoffs in my mind, but I think the Giants are right there with them.
Is this team a sleeper? Because I was thinking, you know what, people are kind of sleeping on this team, and it will sound weird to say, but Seattle, the defending champions, it's like everyone has completely forgot they won the title. You don't hear a lot of talk about them. It's like, all right, they won, but the Rams should have beaten them, you know, that Thursday night game, which they should have. Yeah. Could have beaten them in the title game. Rams got better. Rams are plus 550 to win it all. The Bills and Ravens are 10-1. The Seahawks are the fourth shot at 11-1. Are we sleeping on Seattle? Is it possible? Is last year just a one-off, or is it possible last year is, you know what, they're all young, they'll be back, and last year is just the beginning of a run here? Where do you stand on the Seahawks?
Well, when we did our VSiN NFL betting guide, I was very close to submitting it without the Seahawks in the playoffs. Okay, so wow. I'm kind of, and they bring almost everybody back. If you look at the lineup, it's almost everyone back, and they added to it. They had some young guys that'll probably get better. You add in a running back in Jadarian Price with no mileage on the legs compared to letting go of Kenneth Walker, who was your MVP. I think it all stems to Sam Darnold. Do we believe he can play clean football and not turn it over without Clint Kubiak? That is my concern for the Seahawks. If he can and they can run this offense again, absolutely. But NFL defensive coordinators had an entire offseason to build game plans to stop what it was they were doing. So they can't just copy what they did a year ago and thinking it's going to work. I love Sam Darnold. I love the story of Sam Darnold. A few years ago, I was someone who had him to win comeback player of the year, and I thought we should have cashed those tickets. But at some point, Sam Darnold goes back to being Sam Darnold. We all have to keep that in mind, and that is my concern for the Seahawks. I still think they're a playoff team, but I would not be blown away if they didn't get there.
Yeah, and we've seen the Blue Jays do this now, and the Blue Jays now 10 games under 500, where it's like, oh, that was, you know, they didn't win the World Series, but they took a series of miracles for them not to. I don't know if they're the Blue Jays, or I don't know if this is actually legit. And I'm starting to believe more in Darnold, just because 2 years ago the team was 14-2, 14-3 after they blew up on Thursday night on the final game against Detroit. But you're 14-3 in a game away from the one seed, and then the next year they're the one seed. Like, at some point, maybe this is just real with Darnold, and maybe the year under Shanahan has kind of settled him in, and he's just the talent is there, and he's just a late bloomer.
Well, how about this, even bigger than that, even bigger than Darnold? How about Mike McDonald as a head coach? The trajectory, are we all sleeping on it? If he could win two Super Bowls in the next couple of years, I mean, we're talking about a young guy who all he's done is shown up and build on what they had. When they let go of Pete Carroll, they were lost. They were a lost franchise. They really didn't have a direction. He's a road warrior. They consistently went on the road, and he already got a Super Bowl a couple of years in. I mean, there is a trajectory here where this guy may not be done. I'm curious, though, remember they drafted Jalen Milroe. I don't know what that looks like in the NFL, but developing him is interesting. And then on top of that, if they don't make the playoffs and they get a good pick in the middle of the first round, this is the draft class to kind of have that pick, because there's probably, it's like 2018 in my eyes, there's probably 5, 6, maybe even 7 guys you could consider in the first round. They could get the successor to Darnold in this draft, potentially.
How many awards bets have you made NFL-wise?
You know what? I haven't done any other than the MVP bets. That's all I'm looking at. The other one that I have is Brock Purdy. Are you a Purdy guy? Because I haven't been. I haven't been a Purdy guy where I think he's a superstar. You start to dive into the success he has, and he's returning to the same system. I think I'm way into Brock Purdy, and I think the Niners in a bounce back this year. If he stays healthy, again, it's like Burrow. If he's on the field, he's going to put up monster numbers. You just need him to stay healthy. I think the Mike Evans addition is huge. I think no more Brandon Ayuk as a distraction is massive. Kittle's healthy. The defense will be more respectable, not blowing games for them. I think there's a world where they actually could win the division over the Rams. Everyone's just I love Los Angeles. I think they feel inevitable, but Shanahan's got McVay's number at times. And I think that Brock Purdy, with all of the experience he has, he might be reaching the peak of his powers. I'm way into Brock Purdy around 22-1 to win MVP. Those are the two. I want to throw one at you that I'm considering. And
yeah,
you know me, I don't love betting the top of the board in these awards markets. But I don't see how Bijan Robinson isn't one or two in offensive player of the year. He's the second shot on the board. And if you look at the track record of Stefanski, going back to having Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in Cleveland, he knows how to feed his running backs. He knows how to utilize running backs. You can catch the ball. He has a couple quarterbacks that I don't think are very good at pushing the ball down the field. This might be their best weapon. Offensive player of the year is weird. JSN just won. It went running back with McCaffrey and Barkley before that. I just think Bijan Robinson is like in the perfect situation, and he finally has a coach that's not going to be stupid and taking the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, and it's funny. To go back to Purdy for a second, it's funny you mentioned the 22-1 because I had him in, was it 2023? 22-1.
Christmas.
He was odds on Christmas. And the hedge was right there where take Baltimore plus the 7. If Purdy just hands the ball off and wins an ugly 13-10 game. It was a weird MVP year. There was nobody really behind him to take it. Lamar almost won it by default, where if you look, I think Lamar Wake went under his passing prop for the season for touchdowns. Like, nobody was great. They would have given it to Burrow, to Purdy. It would have been a great story. I didn't hedge. He threw up all over the field and just a horrific, horrific experience, and I wanted to relive that. But
yeah, no, it's funny how you remember those. I think I had McCaffrey that year at a huge number because it was the same thought. Well, nobody's running away with it. McCaffrey's having a crazy year, but even he couldn't get close to home.
We'll switch over to baseball. What have you bet? College football? Any Heisman national title? What have you bet so far?
Yeah, my first Heisman bet, Will, and I'm a Miami fan, and I'm sure you've had the Bear on here hyping up Miami, so I'll always fully disclose that. But I love Dari Mensa, and I think there's a few elements at play here of why I bet him 16-1 over at Circa to be the Heisman. You have a program in Miami that has consistently done it with the transfer quarterback, has maximized their talent. Cam Ward from Washington State to Miami, yes, he was the best quarterback in the portal that year, along with Will Howard and a few others, but no one thought he was the number one pick in the draft. No one was talking about that. Goes to Miami, develops, puts up monster numbers, really helps that program get reborn. You go to Carson Beck the year after that, gets them all the way to the national title game. Mensa, I'd argue, has a better upside than both of them. He maybe doesn't have the size of Cam Ward and the arm strength, but he is a playmaker. He is a really smart thrower of the football. He just took Duke to the ACC title game, and he brings his best receiver in Cooper Barkate with him, who was previously at Harvard and then put up crazy numbers with the Blue Devils. So you bring that together, quarterback, wide receiver, on top of it, Tony's already there, and he looks like a superstar. You bring in two transfers from West Virginia and South Carolina that can stretch the field. But Shannon Dawson in this system, he is so good at putting quarterbacks in good situations. I mean, the schedule's pretty solid for them outside of the game of against Notre Dame. Like, that is the marquee spot. But even if they lose that, they could still be in the national champ or be in the playoff because they'll likely be in the ACC championship game. And then you factor all of that in. I just think Mensa is a guy who's going to be there in the conversation, invited to New York at the end of the season. I love the kid. I love the experience he shows up with. It's really a perfect combination of events for him.
Just turn this into bad beat segment. Yes, I was on Miami last year at long odds, and we know how that went. Didn't hedge. Didn't get the opportunity to hedge. So hitting on some painful ones. Man, you go back and look at that box score against Indiana. That's about as tough as any bet I've ever made, just because, man, it was right there.
They don't
get the punt blocked. Apparently they had the reverse set up, the fake on the punt, and Tony just didn't get the opportunity to throw because they covered the punt well. They dominated yards per play. They were driving down the field to win the game. Beck forced the interception when you didn't even want to score quick there. Oh, frustrating, man. It was right there.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I had them at some preseason numbers, and then when they were on the outside of the playoff looking in some stupid numbers where you're like, all right, I've done worse with $20. Like, I've done stupider things with $20. Let's just throw it on a 150-1 and see what happens and add to the... I always view that as I'm adding to the original ticket. I can't remember what the original bet to win the title was, but it was like, I was just adding to that ticket in my eyes. So I took let's say it was 18-1. I took it up to like 28-1 with my little addition there at $20.
Tough one. All right, let's switch over to baseball. I've been under the impression the last week or two, you know what, Scooble's probably staying put. The Tigers are right there. Still like a week or so away from the deadline. You go into Thursday action, 4.5 out of a wild card spot. If you don't make up any ground, man, 4.5 might be the line. And I've been using like 3 games. If you're 3 or closer, maybe you go for it. If you don't make up any ground in the next week or so, do you trade him? Do you think he stays? Where do you think Scooble is playing 10 days from now?
I think you're getting, though, pennies on the dollar at that point. I think other teams would go, well, why would I bail you out? You could have traded him to me a couple weeks ago and made me look better and helped me with my run. I've been in on Detroit for a while now, but, God, what's frustrating is the offense is showing up. The offense is always the question with this team. The offense has not been an issue. It's kind of everything coming together. They're 3.5-1 to make the playoffs. They're still 8-1 to win the division. I bet 7-1 like a month ago. I thought I was the smartest boy in the world because it dropped down to 4-1. Now it's back up to 8-1. I think there's still a run in them, but I also think it might be foolhardy to doubt Cleveland. Something tells me I don't. You know how teams sometimes are just too young and too dumb to know any better? There's a vibe about Cleveland. I know the offense over like the big picture of the season isn't putting up huge numbers, but Bazana and DeLauder, and they called up this Petey Halpin, I think his name is, kid who's headbutting people in the dugout on the way back from home runs. Sometimes these young kids can get so ahead of themselves that you just catch lightning in a bottle and it's a ride. The pitching is solid. It's not what it was years ago when they had Bieber and it felt like they had like three or four aces. But you know what they have? A lot of strong twos and threes. And I think there's an element where Cleveland's just not going away in that division. So that concerns me about Detroit winning the division. However, what I'd say is if Detroit can get into the wild card, this is a team similar to Pittsburgh in my eyes that's actually built better for the postseason than the regular season, because you can line up Scooble or Skeens to pitch three times in a series. And if you do that, you will have an edge over everyone not named the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I keep waiting for the Pirates, and they need Skeens to be Skeens. Keep waiting for the Pirates to make a run. They just, you know, they'll throw in a bad loss here or there, but hey, they're right in the mix, in terms of being there for a playoff spot. Mason Miller stays or goes?
Has to go. They gave up so much for a closer, as if that was like the last piece. That trade, if you go back and look, it's weirder the more you think about it. Their bullpen was good. They didn't need to make that move. I don't understand selling the level of prospects they did for a closer as if that was like the cherry on top. To me, closer is a spot that you can find closers. Closers is it's a circumstance of a role in a situation, right? It falls into your lap. You can run with it.
It's almost like a kicker.
Yeah, Mason Miller's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diminish him, but the San Diego Padres had some other holes. Like, there were some other things you could have looked at there, especially offensively. I don't think it was worth the trade. And now if I'm someone trying to trade for him, I'm saying, guys, you're not getting back what you gave up. That's not how this works. Just because you spent too much on him doesn't mean I spent too. I'll give you this example. I'm into these auctions for sports memorabilia, Will. When I'm bored, I'll get online and just start looking. And then sometimes I'll just start bidding on things that I don't actually want. I don't know why, but it'll be like $15 here, $20 here. Well, you know what showed up at the house yesterday? Two, and my fiance doesn't know about this, so I'd like to get rid of one of them potentially. Two signed footballs by two current NFL players, because one went for like $13 and I was like, that's too cheap. I just want a signed football behind me. And the other one was a former quarterback, or I guess, yeah, he's a quarterback. And his went for about $25. I said, well, I'll just take two signed NFL footballs. I have signed footballs from Kenny Pickett and Buffalo Bills offensive lineman Connor McGovern. That's what it feels like to me with the Padres and Mason Miller, because now I need to unload these footballs and I'm willing to get less than I paid for them to get them off my hands.
Well, I would love to help you out, but can't do it. You know what? I'll be in Vegas in a couple weeks. Maybe we can sit down and negotiate. What do you want the Mets to do? Is it just trade everyone, trade Lindor, start from scratch? You know, Brosmanel, you can actually, if you do the deadline well, man, I don't know that I would trust Stearns to negotiate a signed Kenny Pickett football negotiation at this point. But if you play it right, Holmes will get you something. Brosnan will get you something. The relievers, Weaver, maybe Williams. You can really load up on some prospects and you can maybe reset. Is that what you want from the Mets? And how disappointed are you with this season?
Oh, this is up there. This is, you know what it is, Will? It's new levels of disappointment that you never really felt before. Like, I'll go back to someone who's appeared on this pod before. I think it was 2002. Steve Phillips had, in my opinion, one of the most impressive off seasons you're ever going to see a GM have. He brought in multiple aces to fill out his staff behind Leiter, and I want to say Rick Reed was there and Traxel was there. But he brought in Pedro Estacio, who's an ace in Colorado, who actually wasn't horrible at Coors Field somehow. Sean Estes, who was a one or a two in San Francisco. And then he brought in Jeremy Burnett, brought back Roger Cedeno. He gave up Kevin Apier for Mo Vaughn. Everyone talks about the Mo Vaughn trade. Dude, he gave up nothing. He gave up a number three starter for the potential of 40 home runs and an MVP bat. If it doesn't work out, it didn't work out. Roberto Alomar for Alex Escobar, who turned into nothing. Alomar is coming off a historic second base season. He looked like Rogers Hornsby the year before. My point is, that offseason, to me, the disappointment the next year, because I thought that they were a loaded roster and it felt like we were the Yankees for once. This offseason was like that in a way with the expectations. It wasn't as splashy, but David Stearns has kept telling us all along, I know more than you. I know more than you. Don't worry. We're not going to pay Pete Alonso. I know more than you. We're going to get rid of Brandon Nimmo. Don't worry. I know more than you. I'm not really going to address starting pitching. I'm just going to bring in Freddie Peralta because I know him. And remember, I know more than you. We get the value deal on Bichette because they move off of Tucker. And you're like, oh, things are starting to come together for this group. I like the. Oh, I went from hating the David Stearns moves to saying, you know what? He had some tricks up his sleeve. None of them worked out. Because you know what happened here, Will? My man with the laptop and the algorithm and all the coding that he's doing there, trying to make these players into something they're not, which is just numbers on a spreadsheet, he failed to identify that you need chemistry, you need attitude, you need leadership, and this whole organization sold its soul for Juan Soto. I don't think they ever win a championship with Juan Soto. I don't think he's that dude. I think he is a me-first player, and that's fine. I don't mind that, but for my team, I just think you can't have a guy making that much money and not take on a role of leadership. And they're going to have to trade Lindor, it feels like. When I look at the Mets this year, a long way of answering your question, this is one of the biggest disappointments because the NL East was right there for the taking.
Yeah, all good points. Any final baseball? I'll ask you this, NL MVP. You know, I know you're always looking to be contrarian, look for long shots. Ohtani, if he doesn't pitch for a while, he's won the award so many times. I know baseball voters are not necessarily like basketball and NFL voters where they get sick of the narrative. They kind of just look at the stats and they spit out who's the MVP and how could you argue with Ohtani. Does Ohtani have to pitch to an MVP? Do you like anything in this market? I think Ohtani's vulnerable. I just don't see anyone I'm like dying to bet. What are your thoughts here on this race in this market?
No, I'm not on the PCA thing. Maybe that's because I don't have a ticket to defend, but I don't see what everyone else sees where I think that he's on that level. To me, the only guy I'd consider, and I talked about this on Pods of the Future with JVT and Mitch Moss, and Mitch brought it up, James Wood. If Washington were somehow to sneak into a playoff spot or maybe even finish a game out, you got to talk about James Wood. I mean, he's the best hitter in baseball. He's having a historic season. If he hits 45, 50 bombs, I think that's the guy I'd consider because everything for Washington feeds off of him. It's not a very sexy play. I don't see how it's not Ohtani. I really don't. Even if he doesn't pitch another inning the rest of the way, he pitched enough to justify it. And it does feel like whether you agree with it or not, now I don't, these voters just care about war. They're just like, oh, what's the war at the end of the year? Oh, it's this. That's who gets the award. As if that's the end all be all and watching the games doesn't matter. We as a society and specifically bettors, well, my new obsession is, throw your analytics out. Tell me what you're seeing. I'm so sick of people hiding behind numbers because they're scared to have an opinion. I don't. Is Ohtani having that good of an offensive year that he should be a runaway with the award? I don't know. But I also know I don't love anyone else. It's either James Wood or someone I already bet, Kyle Schwarber at 43-1.
Did you play Immaculate Grid yet today?
I didn't. You want to do one live on the air?
I was just thinking, I just pulled it up. You know what? I don't know what you said that made me think of it, but I was like,
dude, this could be a podcast. Every day we just link up for like 15 minutes and go.
That's not like the worst idea I've ever heard. I'm sure all eight people that would listen would enjoy it.
But people would be having so much anxiety yelling at us like, how did you not know it's this guy?
A White Sox center fielder. What's a random White Sox center fielder that
Willie Harris. In your head?
Willie Harris. Let's see what that brings.
I love
here.
Using utility guys, or my favorite is when it's like played first base. I like to use or played like shortstop or third base. 0.2%. It's a good
0.2%. How about a Red Sox and a Rocky?
That's a tough one because there hasn't been a lot of movement with the Rockies lately. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like there's been a lot of Rockies going to other places. Usually they just fizzle out there. Let me think, Red Sox.
You know, it's funny how you have certain, it's a great reflection of how the brain works of like what you remember, what errors you remember, what sticks. It's just a great mental exercise playing Immaculate Grid. And it's funny. Sometimes when I see like our Red Sox and Rockies, I'll associate a game between those two. And I'll think of that. Like, who's the guy, Aaron Cook? I was like, did he play for both or am I thinking of him? Cause he pitched the World Series against the Red Sox. So it's funny. Just the strengths and weaknesses of the human brain.
Did Jonathan Lucroy play for? Oh, I got one. Adam Ottavino started with the Rockies, right?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's probably
4%.
Yeah. It's a little high. You'd like to be a little bit lower.
Yankees, what? Rockies, Yankees, man. Yankees, boy, Yankees is my wheelhouse.
Randall Grichuk.
Grichuk's a good one, but it's too recent, I feel like, even though that is a good one. I feel like Charlie Hayes played for the Rockies.
Well, what is it before I put mine in? You tell me what it is you put into yours.
Charlie Hayes, 4%. A little disappointed.
Let me see what Grichuk is. You never know. You're right, though, with the 0.5.
Wow, that surprises me.
That's a good one. Well, now I wasted Grichuk for Rockies center fielder. Who is a Rockies utility guy? Did Chris Owings ever play center field for them? That's what you got to figure out. I don't know if he, I know he's a utility guy, but I don't know if he ever played center. You can't go obvious like Chuck Blackman. Sam Hilliard? I feel like probably. That's too recent. Sam Hilliard might be a good one.
I should know because we go to Hartford, the double A team is near our house. We go to three or four games a summer. And they have a beautiful ballpark. I recommend anyone in that area, in this Connecticut area.
Oh, that's the Rockies affiliate?
Yeah. Beautiful ballpark. Dunkin' Donuts Park. So we see a lot of the guys I follow, not follow, but you know, you're familiar with some of the guys. Like, oh, I remember when he played. So I should have somebody in mind, but I don't have anyone recent here.
I'm going to say Chris Owings and hope I'm right, but I don't think he ever played center for them. No, he did 0.07. Wow.
Wow. That's cooking right there. That is cooking right there.
We're all right. Red Sox.
I was thinking
White
of the
Sox.
07 team or those really good Rockies teams when they made the playoffs and they went to a World Series.
Yeah.
All within a three. Who's the guy? Seth something. I'm trying to think of Seth, like an outfielder, because I feel like back then.
Not Seth Brown. Seth.
No.
I don't remember. Red Sox and White Sox is kind of a tough one. I'm not going to lie.
I went the late Bobby Jenks.
That's the name that jumps out immediately. What was his number?
He was a good one. I just went to look up what guy I'm trying to think of because it's driving me crazy. And it was 1%.
Oh, I might roll with that unless Giolito. But that might be too.
That's
recent.
A good one. That's a good one.
Chris Sale is too obvious.
Yeah, it is.
Sure, there's an old one we're missing. I'm gonna go Giolito. 1%, not horrible. My whole thing is I want to stay below 1%.
Do you play every day?
No, it's honestly, it's like when I'm sitting on the toilet, I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch TikToks anymore. Let me pull up Immaculate Grid.
Yeah.
Yankees, can, oh, White
I'm
Sox.
Thinking of Ryan Spilborough. I don't know why I thought Seth.
Oh,
Ryan Spilborough.
Yeah, he does the games now.
Of.
Yeah, he's a good
Yeah,
guest,
I think
though.
So. I think so. Maybe Brad Hopp. Who knows? We've reached the end of the podcast. This was fun. I hope somebody enjoyed it. Dustin, where can we find you?
All right. I'm X at Dustin Sweetelson and all over VEASAN for the next few weeks until Cashing Out returns in August at night.
Me and you Friday night, I think, right?
Yeah, let's do it, baby. Let's have some fun. Right. I haven't done a Friday night show at VEASAN in forever.
Should be fun. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, dude.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Dustin Sweetelson. Thank you guys for listening. Try to got a couple more reviews here. We're up to 80 on Apple. I would appreciate it if you guys would keep these coming in. Just take a second, leave a 2-word review, 5-star, and it helps us out. So if you get the time to do that, we'd appreciate it. Be back on Monday. See you then. Enjoy the weekend.